Dave Grohl sometimes forgets he's aged until he catches his reflection. Chipped teeth from microphones, bags under his eyes from jet lag, patches of white in his beard. At a Hurricane Sandy benefit concert, he had an epiphany watching two aging rock stars backstage. One perfectly preserved with cosmetic work, the other authentically weathered. He chose then to embrace his years rather than fight them, finding beauty in road-worn individuality over manufactured perfection. His memory remains intact, measuring life in musical increments rather than calendar time. Songs trigger memories like an unfinished mixtape, each track connecting to specific moments in his remarkable journey. Through his storytelling, we're invited into the chaotic, beautiful world of a man who transformed from suburban kid to rock icon without losing his fundamental decency and wonder. What makes Grohl's story so compelling isn't just his musical achievements, but how he maintained his humanity throughout. In a world where fame often corrupts, his ability to remain grounded while reaching extraordinary heights reminds us that authenticity isn't just possible, it might be the secret ingredient to lasting success. Dad, I want to learn how to play the drums. When Dave's 8-year-old daughter Harper approached him with splintered drumsticks, he felt pride, until recalling his single jazz lesson that exposed he'd been holding his sticks backward for years. With Harper, he skipped technique and taught AC/DC's Back in Black. Her natural stance mirrored his childhood posture, not coincidence, but genetics. Musical abilities weren't divine gifts, but inherited traits. This inheritance manifested in his older daughter, Violet, too, who possessed perfect pitch and vocal mimicry. She formed a band, mastering everything from Aretha Franklin to the Ramones. Watching her perform at the Roxy while Harper pursued music and Dave's mother looked on, three generations witnessed their artistic legacy unfold. Like other inherited talents, there's something profound about seeing the next generation carry forward both genes and passions, life's purest form of immortality. Her name was Sandy, Dave's first heartbreak in seventh grade, 1982. He left his North Springfield neighborhood, a faded Kodachrome of 70s Americana between Stand By Me and River's Edge. A struggling student discovering punk through the B-52s and Devo, Dave navigated school with his plastic comb, avoiding fights and feeling like an outsider. His week-long steady relationship with blue-eyed Sandy ended when she didn't want to get tied down. That night, dreaming of rock stardom with Sandy crying in the front row, he realized his guitar might be his true love, a revelation that would shape his future. In North Springfield, young Dave was a daredevil, exploring drainpipes, leaping from rooftops, and throwing crab apples at cars. At 9, he took a golf club to the skull and walked home in a blood-soaked Superman t-shirt before calmly asking for his mother. The hospital staff knew him by name from frequent visits, his body collecting scars like badges. Curiously, he never felt the physical pain, only the fear of emotional aftermath. At 13, Dave visited his cousin Tracy in Evanston. Though not blood relatives, they were connected through their mothers, former singing partners in Ohio's Three Bells. The 700-mile journey from Virginia to Chicago changed everything when Tracy, a punk rocker with Doc Martens and a shaved head, introduced him to underground bands like the Misfits and Black Flag. At the Cubby Bear, watching Naked Raygun perform, Dave discovered his tribe. In the chaos of spit and sweat and broken glass, he transformed from an insecure kid into a confident punk rocker. At 17, Dave performed a ritual with the John Bonham logo and 606, believing in manifestation before knowing its name. This belief in willpower proved vital in 2015 at Sweden's Olevi Stadium, when, after falling and severely injuring his ankle, he finished the show. He endured having his ankle reset, biting on his wife's leather jacket, then performed seated with his guitar. At 17, Dave auditioned for Franz Stahl of DC's hardcore punk band Scream. Rather than play Led Zeppelin as suggested, he performed Scream songs he'd learned from their records, impressing Franz enough to earn a callback. With failing grades and his mother's cautionary blessing, "You'd better be good," Dave dropped out of school, rejecting his father's hopes for him to become a Republican businessman. After quitting Dane Bramage and taking a warehouse job, Dave made his Scream debut in July 1987. Their fall tour, 23 shows across America in just over a month, became his first real taste of life beyond the suburbs, exposing him to cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles for the first time. In Toronto, June 1990, Dave got an unexpected opportunity during a sound check at the Rivoli. After Iggy Pop arrived in a black limo, Dave was invited to play drums with him. Iggy, introducing himself as Jim, rehearsed classics like "I Wanna Be Your Dog" before transforming into his legendary stage persona, screaming "Fuck you!" as they launched into 1969 with Dave drumming at full intensity. When Scream's bassist disappeared in Los Angeles, Dave joined Nirvana through a mutual friend. After connecting with Kurt Cobain over shared musical tastes, Dave made the difficult decision to leave Scream, encouraged by his mother's wisdom about putting personal needs first. He packed up and headed to Seattle. In Olympia, Kurt and Dave shared a basic apartment, with Dave sleeping on a burned couch and surviving on convenience store food. Their first modest advance of $400 went to a BB gun and Nintendo, though music remained their focus. Nirvana's ambition was clear. Kurt told an executive they wanted to be the biggest band in the world. They honed their signature quiet-loud dynamic through daily practice sessions in a converted barn. As they prepared for Nevermind, Kurt created classics like Come As You Are and Smells Like Teen Spirit. After signing with DGC and bringing on manager John Silva, they chose Butch Vig as producer and recorded at Sound City Studios, known for its drum acoustics. When they debuted Smells Like Teen Spirit in Seattle in April 1991, the crowd's reaction suggested something momentous was brewing. Nevermind was released September 24, 1991, catapulting the band from underground punk to mainstream success. Kurt struggled to reconcile his anti-corporate values with their meteoric rise as their audience shifted from punk rockers to mainstream fans. By Halloween, they'd earned a gold record, though their success tested both their punk ethics and relationships. Dave's journey from suburban musician to global rock star was swift, yet he preserved the same genuine passion for music that began in his cousin's Chicago bedroom.